You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Driven by a need to ensure the world is better prepared for future pandemics, for the past 2 years, the World Health Organization's 194 member states have been negotiating an international accord on pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response. While it initially aimed to have reached an agreement by last month, talks have been extended. I spoke to Professor Michael Baker from the Department of Public Health at the University of Otago about what a global pandemic treaty might look like, as well as asking him about New Zealand's current response systems to COVID-19. So, World Health Organization member states have been negotiating for 2 years on forming this global pandemic agreement, and while it initially aimed for an agreement last month, talks have been extended. Just firstly, why do you think it's taken the international community so long to form an agreement?
Yes, well, I think the other context, of course, is that the World Health Assembly did agree to the International Health Regulations revision. And so that was a great milestone. I mean, the IHR 2005 was a huge advance in thinking about managing pandemics. And this revision was fairly modest, but even that had to be toned down to get all 194 countries to agree to it. So that was one step. Now, the pandemic agreement was also being negotiated in parallel, and it was far broader in terms of its aspirations, and that didn't get over the line. It still had quite a bit more work to do, and it's partly because it's advocating for a much broader range of changes. And the major point really is that wealthy countries need to support the developing world more so that they have the capabilities to manage pandemics.
And so the World Health Assembly has passed by consensus several important amendments to the international health regulations. However, not all proposed amendments were achieved. Can you briefly talk through these? Just what can we expect to come out of this agreement, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think you're right. Some of the things in the agreement will pick up on points that weren't included in the IHR. And these were things like preventing zoonotic spillovers from animals. That's the One Health approach, because most new emerging infections that cause pandemics come from animals. And we're seeing that playing out now, unfortunately, with avian influenza in the US now established in mammals and cattle for the first time. And that's spilling over to infect humans. And, for example, cats and other animals had contact with cows. So that's quite worrying. And there was a hope that would be more represented in the international health regulations. So now it hopefully will be picked up in the pandemic agreement. The other big area is around sharing of scientific data and specimen. And that is that early on in the pandemic, where it's occurring, scientists and doctors will be collecting specimens from affected people and perhaps animals as well. And that's really vital in rapidly developing vaccines and tests and so on, so that you can actually manage the outbreak or potential pandemic as it's spreading. And we saw that in China with COVID-19. Fortunately, health authorities there were reasonably quick in making the sequences of that virus available, so the world could start developing vaccines immediately and also tests, because these have to be very specific. So that's a second area that's not well covered by the IHR but could be in this pandemic agreement. Another area is accountability, so that countries do have to be very transparent in what's happening, and that's been a limitation with the IHR. And we even saw it in China with COVID-19, that there were unfortunately delays in saying that this virus is now transmitting between people. We went through quite a bit of January with that being a bit uncertain, when in fact, it was very clear to local authorities it was the beginning of a pandemic, and that really delayed the opportunity to stamp it out at source. The other areas are really around making more resources available for low-income countries. And we unfortunately saw this with the COVID vaccine, where supply is always going to be limited early on. And you saw it, the vaccine being almost hoarded by high-income countries. And they actually ordered far more vaccine than they needed for their population. And that's partly political reasons. And it meant that low-income countries were further down the queue. And I think, understandably, that is an area where when you have all countries in the world represented at the World Health Assembly, is going to be a major debating point.
To kind of add on to what you're saying there, why do you think it's so important for the international community to have this agreement as opposed to states each managing and controlling COVID infections individually? Why do we need global cooperation here?
Well, there's certain threats where we are all in it together, and they are pretty obvious. It's pandemics that spread globally. It's climate change, which obviously we're all affected by that. It's various forms of pollution of the air and the oceans. And there's actually scores of international agreements that have arisen over decades to try and manage these collective threats. And pandemics are just one of them. But surely now there must be huge momentum globally to get this right, because we've just come out of the worst pandemic for a century, approaching 30 million people dead, catastrophic effects to the global economies, and I think really quite severe effects on political cohesiveness, education and well-being across the globe. And we're still not out of it yet. I mean, we still have an ongoing COVID pandemic. So now you'd think, because we've had such a vivid example of why cooperation is desperately needed, that we would all be supporting this. All countries on earth would be supporting this agreement. But I think it's because of these fracture lines, I think particularly between rich and poorer countries, that is still a sticking point. And I think the group that's been working on this has actually been led by Helen Clark and another world leader. And they had an independent panel, which has been meeting for 3 years. And it's come up with, I think, very strong recommendations for what should be in the pandemic agreement. And a lot of it is around global health equity. So I'm really hoping that we do make advances in this area. There is a timetable over the next year to get this right. But, of course, it will be affected hugely by the large number of critical elections that are happening at the moment globally. And that will alter the global consensus environment that we need to get these agreements over the line.
And I wanted to talk about New Zealand's current response. In a recent article with One News, you spoke about New Zealand's business as casual approach to COVID-19. What current systems do we have in place to respond to COVID? Do you think that they are proportionate to the scale of risk and infection in Aotearoa at the moment? Or do you think that we're maybe getting a bit complacent?
I think we are being very complacent. And as an epidemiologist, I look at the numbers and say, is there cause for concern here? And a lot of it is around mortality, hospitalization, and inequality. You know, they are major things that we need to track. With COVID-19, we are seeing the way this virus behaves. Unfortunately, it keeps mutating, and some of these mutations give it an advantage, so it gets ahead of our immunity. And we're just coming out now of our sixth major national wave over the last 30 months. And these last three waves have been getting bigger. And so this recent wave, we were seeing over 55 people a day going into hospital, and now 4 to 5 people a day dying from this infection, so about 30 a week. That's a large health impact. It's our number one infectious disease killer in New Zealand, and I think that's a huge concern. The other concern is that a high proportion of people, perhaps between 5 and 14%, will get long COVID. And for some, that will be disabling long term, but certainly many people will be unable to work and attend to their normal activities. And obviously their well-being is hugely reduced because of this infection. So it's having wider effects on productivity in the economy. So I think it ticks all the boxes for a major national concern. We know we have tools. They're not perfect tools, but we have ways of turning down that number of infections. And we've advocated for a integrated respiratory infectious disease strategy for New Zealand to deal with all of these respiratory infections, COVID-19, and also influenza and RSV and so on. And in some respects, New Zealand does have some very good responses. We're fortunately still making COVID-19 vaccine freely available, and that's really the number one protection for people. But other measures we've really, I think, wound back, and it's particularly the support for people to self-isolate when they're sick, because obviously that's a key way of interrupting transmission. And also thinking about other tools like improving indoor air quality, really paying huge attention to that. And I think a particular environment is schools, where you have a lot of students going and now into classrooms where they might have more than 100 students in a single modern learning environment. And that's obviously an environment with this huge risk of transmission of COVID-19 and influenza. And one group who are really adversely affected are the teachers, who are regularly being exposed to these infections. So all of these, this process is really reducing the ability of some of our systems to function, like schools. The other environment, of course, is hospitals, where we have, I think, got much less stringent about measures like mask wearing in that environment. And we know that there's a lot of COVID-19 infection actually being acquired in hospitals. And we're not even counting that, but it will be quite a significant amount. And also some people will be dying from that that infection. So there are a lot of things we could do better.
That was Professor of Public Health at the University of Otago, Michael Baker, speaking to me about a global pandemic treaty and how Aotearoa is responding to COVID at the moment.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.